Okay, so thank you. Actually, I should thank the workshop organizers for letting me be very liberal with how I interpreted the title of the workshop. So the way I interpreted it was locally decodable codes and other stuff. But actually, less liberally interpreted the part about public key encryption with special properties to mean public key systems with special properties. And so this is a blind signature. Signatures are public key crypto, and so there we are. So I was asked to end on time. I prepared about a 25-30 minute talk. I should be able to finish within an hour. All right, so this is joint work with Carmina Favai and Yehuda Bundel and Efari Lan and Chuyen Hu at the University of Maryland. So I'm not sure how many people in the audience are familiar with the concept of blind signatures, but basically it's a very nice functionality introduced by Chaum in the early 80s that allows a user to obtain a signature from a signer on some message M. And the property is, well, it's blind in the sense that the signer shouldn't be able to learn anything about the message that's being, the signature is being obtained by the user. And motivation for this, again going back to Chaum, is for use in eCash, e-voting, etc. I'll talk about these on the next two slides. And generally speaking, it's a primitive that's useful when we have values that need to be certified, yet some measure of anonymity should still be preserved. So for example, in the context of eCash, I mean, simplifying many requirements and many other things you'd want in the system, the basic idea is the following. You have a bank who has a public key PK that's known to everybody in the system, and a user wants to withdraw some electronic coin from their bank account, as it were. So what they do is they send their account information to the bank, they identify themselves, so it's not anonymous, the withdrawal process is not anonymous in itself. They send some information because their account is going to have to be debited in the appropriate amount. And then they'll obtain, using this blind signature protocol, a valid signature sigma under the bank's public key of some coin or e-coin to C. And the point is that now when the user later wants to spend this coin at a particular merchant, they will send C, sigma to the merchant. The merchant can then verify that sigma is an appropriate signature on this coin with respect to the bank's public key. And the point of what the blind signature buys you is that if everything was done appropriately, it should be infeasible to trace this particular coin to a particular user, right? So at the time of withdrawal, the user is identified. Again, we have to debit the user's bank account. But then when it comes to later spend the coin, you can't identify which user is actually spending this coin on whatever book they're buying from Amazon. Right? So it's kind of like physical cash in that respect. In the context of e-voting, we have a registration authority, for example, who might have a public key PK known again to everybody in the system. A voter now comes to the authority during some pre-registration phase, or during registration phase rather, proves that she's a valid voter, you know, that she's a resident or whatnot, and then can obtain a signature, a sigma I, on some short-term temporary public key PKI that's going to be generated by this voter and used only for this application. And then at a later point in time, when you actually want to run the election, the voter can cast her vote V on, say, some public bulletin board by just posting PKI, sigma I, V, and sigma. So PKI is, again, her public key. Sigma I certifies that this is a public key that was that corresponds to a user who was valid and was checked by the registration authority. V is the vote, and then sigma is the signature on this vote of this particular user. And again, the point is the user is identified during the registration, but then later when they cast their vote, it should be infeasible to trace the particular public key, PKI, as well as the signature, sigma I, back to any particular user in the registration phase.
So just to check, so these blind signatures, are they by themselves useful for anything, or they're like, you know, they're like by themselves useless, but they're like building blocks because you need like blind
signatures.
Well,
I mean, are signatures useful by themselves?
Well, yeah, no, but I'm saying,
well, what do you do with a signature?
So it's in all these applications.
If nobody ever verifies it, is it actually a signature?
No, but what? You can just apply by signature to any message you want. You can only apply by signature.
Oh, okay, so that's actually a good point, and then maybe you're going to beat me to the punch by a couple of slides. So actually, the applications I know of are where the message that's being, whose signature is being obtained by the user should have or is expected to have some particular form. Or in particular for honest users, it's chosen from some known distribution. I don't know, actually, of any application where you know, the user should pick some arbitrary message of their own choosing, like a document, and get a signature on it. I mean, I guess you can propose things like signing carbon copy without knowing what you're signing. It's not clear why that is really useful.
No, but I'm talking about other things, so it's actually a problem. So if you just have
a
blind signature, it's unless you can say that the user can kind of, before obtaining the signature, prove that he only obtained a signature
on
this person.
So in either of these cases, it doesn't matter, right? Because if I get a signature on a crazy public key, you know, maybe I can pass the valid vote, but who cares? If I get for the eCoin case, I mean, again, modulo special properties you might want, I would just get a signature on a random value, and the only thing you want there is to check for double spending, so it doesn't really matter what format this random value might have.
No,
the signer doesn't know. So, the way I wrote it is just kind of, I didn't specify, but the point is the user obtains a signature of sigma I on PKI. The bank, the registration authority in this example doesn't learn what it's actually signing. So it's kind of oblivious to what's actually going on the other side of the protocol, but the user is able to recover a signature. Same thing. So the bank doesn't know. So the bank, say, gives out $1 tokens. And so the user might request a signature on a random string, which represents $1. But the bank doesn't actually learn the actual string being signed.
Why is that important?
Because you don't want to be able to trace later when the user spends the token. So in terms of security requirements, we need to consider both the requirements in terms of the signer and in terms of the user. Protection of the signer goes under the name of unforgeability, and protection of the user is called blindness or anonymity. Unforgeability, I'm not going to define it formally, but it's easy to obtain from this informal description. And the basic idea is what you might expect, that if you have a user or a coalition of users who interact with the signer for some number of times, then the best they should be able to do is to produce exactly the number of signatures equal to the number of times they interacted with the signer. Right? So if a malicious user, or again, think of a collection of malicious users, interacts with the honest signer n times, then it should be infeasible for this user to output valid signatures on n plus 1 distinct messages. Right? So it's kind of the standard notion of unforgeability for digital signatures. The one twist here is that we actually, it may not be well defined to speak about what messages the user is requesting signatures on, right? So in a standard unforgeability game, you require that he can't output a signature on something that he didn't explicitly query to the signing oracle. Here, there are no explicit signing oracle queries, so you have to talk in terms of number of signatures rather than difference or not.
But can't you want him to commit to the message?
You could, but then you're imposing additional requirements, and so protocols may not have this property that you can extract.
So you mean it's not considered cheating if you can get n signatures and messages that he doesn't know what they are?
Right. So it's not considered cheating if I can get n signatures on. I mean, in general, the way I think about it is the user inputs a message anyway, so they can get signatures on whatever they want anyway. In some other applications, you don't want that, but for what I'm talking about, the user can pick whatever signatures it wants anyway, but only n of them. And these interactions with the signer might be sequential, parallel, or concurrent. And it's actually easy to show a protocol secure against parallel attacks, but which is demonstrably insecure against concurrent attacks. And so I'll leave it for as an exercise for the listener.
Wait, when do you mean protocol?
So it's easy to show assuming blind signature protocols exist at all, it's easy to show a protocol that's secure if you allow the users to interact in parallel, but insecure if they can interact concurrently. Now, coming to the blindness definition, which is supposed to protect the user. So again, intuitively, the property we want is that a malicious signer should be unable to link a particular message, comma, signature pair to any particular execution of the protocol. Right? And what one key point here is just that you really want to talk about the pair of message and signature. It's not enough to only talk about the message, because in these applications, the user is always going to come at some point later in time and present both the message and the signature. It is a little bit messy to formalize, I think. I mean, so I'll go through the standard definition and then say what kind of goes wrong with it. And I'll propose a new definition, then you can tell me what's wrong with it. But basically, the standard definition, and I put it in quotes here because I don't know of really a reference that actually gives a standard definition. It's kind of taking the strongest requirements from a bunch of different definitions that have appeared in the literature. We have a malicious signer who outputs a public key and two messages of 0 and M1. A random bit B is selected, and then the signer gets to interact concurrently with a user, the first instance running an execution of the protocol with MB, and the second instance running with M1 minus B, because it's either one order or the other. If either user instance aborts because of actions of the signer, then the signer gets nothing after the execution. If neither of the instances abort, then the signer gets the computed signatures on M0 and M1. And then the we can define some success of the signer in terms of its probability of guessing the bit B, and we require that the probability that it guesses B should be essentially 1/2. Just a couple of points about the definition. So the interaction with the users is concurrent as well. I read it's in the enforceability definition. We're going to be interested in the concurrent definition. So for blindness, we're going to impose the same. We allow the signer to output a malicious public key, PK, not necessarily well-formed. So some prior definitions sort of restrict the signer to outputting a valid public key or according to the appropriate distribution. We're not going to impose this requirement. Again, I want to allow the signer to learn the signatures on the messages M0 and M1 that are computed by the users running the protocol. Again, there were some prior definitions that do not consider this, but that's, I really think that's a severe weakening of the definition because in applications, the signatures are going to be available. Yeah?
The signatures are available, can't you use it to trace in your applications?
Can you trace?
Can you not trace the... So the signature doesn't already use a bank?
No, it does reach the bank. That's the point. So the point is, you know, I either interact, so I interact with two users. Either the first one held M0 and the second one held M1, or vice versa. Then at some later point in time, I see sigma 0, sigma 1, but I don't know what order they were computed in.
So what do you mean previous definitions did not consider the signatures? So what did they consider?
So they just defined the protocol. The protocol should be blind, but the signatures can be whatever.
I don't understand. How can it be blind if
It's not trivial to get something that doesn't like, once you get the signature, you know.
Yeah, I can give an example,
actually.
Yeah, so it's actually, you can give a simple example, but yeah.
It's clear that you don't care if one user supports and the other one doesn't.
Okay, right, so that's a good question. And the point is that in this particular case, if a user instance aborts, you may care about the other one. The problem is that for non-triviality, you have to define things this way. Because from the signature, you can always tell what message it's associated with by just running the verification algorithm. And so if let's say the first instance aborts, and then you come up with the signature on message M1, you know the second instance held M1, and you can trivially break anonymity. So it's really more of a non-triviality requirement. So the point is, let's say that the first instance of the user aborts. So then there's only one signature being produced by the execution with these two users here. And then it's easy to break the anonymity game if you're given the signature, because you look at the signature from the second instance, you figure out whether it's a signature on M0 or M1, and then you trivially know the bit P.
Why can't you say the same thing if nobody aborts?
No, if nobody aborts, you get two signatures, and then you have sigma 0, sigma 1, and then you don't know which was produced in which session.
But you still need to verify something, right? Sorry, I get confused. Right. So who verifies the signature in the application?
So, I mean, in the application, it could be anybody verifying it. There's no, in this definition, there's no notion of verification. But
in your application, there was somebody verifying a signature as related to a particular message.
So, yeah, so the merchant in the eCash case and you know, the person tallying the votes in the election case.
The signatures that he gets at the end, I mean, are swapped. It's not, he gets them in a set, not associated with the...
They're not in the order that they were produced. They're electrographically
ordered. Applications, don't you need the signature to be connected to a particular message?
Yeah. So you present M0 comma sigma 0, M1 comma sigma 1, and then you look at these and you decide which instance corresponded to which message.
You say which user is connected to.
Yeah. Exactly.
And why do you need two users? I mean, why can't you just say that you have just one user and he selects one bit and then maybe. The signer signs and he has to tell which message.
Right, so then you have the problem again. So if you have a single user, and then you want the user to come later and present the signature. And so once you present the signature, you can learn the message, right? The signature may leak all of the message. And so that you're not hiding the message altogether, you're hiding which order that they were signed in. Yeah?
Suppose there are more than two messages. You ideally want to hide the order.
Yeah, so this is my next point, actually. This is going to be my next point. Maybe I won't go through this. Well, okay, let me go through it actually, because I'm talking about definitions. So, and I'll get to the question in about a slide or two. Just in terms of this issue of dealing with abort, why can't we just assume maybe that the signer never aborts, and if it aborts, it loses the game? Well, the point is actually that there are real attacks you can concoct, and actually schemes that seem natural but fall prey to these attacks, where if you have the possibility of a message-dependent abort, then you can actually potentially learn which order the messages were signed in. So for example, imagine you have a protocol where the signer can act in such a way that the user will abort if it's using M0, but will not abort if it uses M1. right? So now consider the following attack. You act in this particular way in the first session, and you act completely honestly in the second session. So now, just by learning whether or not the user's abort, you learn which is the correct value of B, right? Because if it was actually M0 in the first session, it will abort. If it was the other order, then neither of them would abort. So the presence of an abort or not is already allowing you to figure out what was signed in which session, and this can actually give you a real-world attack. I mean, whatever the real world means. The question that was raised about how do we extend this definition to the case of multiple users, more than two. And in fact, we spent a fair bit of time just thinking about this as we were writing the paper. I mean, I should mention, all previous definitions only consider the two-user case for whatever reason, I guess historically. And it's not quite clear the best way to extend it to a case of N users all interacting with the system or with the signer at the same time. And the real issue is what you do about abort. So if the signer never aborts, then you can imagine some definition where you have two permutations on messages and it shouldn't be able to tell whether the users are running in one permutation or the other. The problem you run into is what happens when the server aborts in session I but no other sessions. What signatures do you give the signer and which ones do you not? And you can come up with definitions that fit the same kind of paradigm as what I had on the previous slide, but extend to end users. It's not clear to me how natural any of them are. You have to sort of impose some kind of seemingly arbitrary restrictions on what set of signatures the signer gets back. And so what I thought is maybe a way of rethinking the definition, which is if we step back a minute and think about what we want, and this relates a little bit to Yevgeny's question earlier, we want in the application that the signer should be unable to link any message signature pair with any particular completed, i.e. non-aborted session, any better than random guessing over all the sessions that are non-aborted. So equivalently, in the two-user case, we can write it in the following way, that the probability that the signer can guess B, conditioned on both sessions completing, should be negligibly close to 1/2. And furthermore, in applications, the messages are not chosen by the signer, but they're actually chosen by the user according to some distribution. Right, so again, we're protecting against honest users here, so we can assume the users are actually choosing their messages according to the right distribution. So we actually don't need to think about the signer picking M0, M1 and giving them to the users. We can imagine actually that the users are instead picking them from some distribution. And so more generally, if we want to now extend this to the case of N users, we can imagine the following game.
So just so I understand, this, you weaken the definition.
So it's actually not clear, right? So it's weaker in some respects and stronger in others. It's weaker in the sense that we don't allow the signer, well, you'll see in a minute, but it's weaker in...
The distribution.
It's not clear. Actually, it's not clear because so it's weaker not because of that, because you can actually make your distribution here over two messages if you like. So that's not an issue. The issue that's weaker, I'll tell you what it is that, so imagine you have a protocol where if the signer sends a bit one in the first round, then the user sends a message in the clear and aborts. Okay? So then in the previous definition, that would be considered insecure because you can link a message with a user. But in real life, the user is going to abort and never use that coin, so you're not actually breaking any notion of anonymity. So yes, it's weaker in some respects and stronger than others, but I claim that the weakening is irrelevant.
You might have some
notion of privacy that you want. So if you had a notion where the user was getting signatures on a message of his choice, so say, I want him to sign the deed on my house and I don't want people to know how much my house is worth, then that would be a problem. But if I'm thinking about signing things that are just chosen from a distribution anyway, like in the eCash case or in the e-voting case, then it's not an issue. And it's actually, for people who care, it's related to this issue in the notion of commitments, where there are protocols where you can never learn anything about the sender's bit, and other protocols where you can actually learn the sender's bit, but then the sender learns that you learned it, and so you can just abort the protocol. And so it's kind of similar flavor to that. So in the definition, we can have the signer output a public key and now a distribution of messages, rather than an M0 and M1. But again, the distribution could be over two messages if it chooses. We have N users now. We'll have each user pick their message MI according to this distribution.
Independently?
Dependently.
So if you wanted them to choose two different messages.
Yeah, so here, but if they, okay, so if they choose, so if you put a two message distribution, then with sufficiently high probability, they'll be different. And, the signer now interacts with the users holding these messages 1 through L. It's again given MI, sigma I for all completed sessions. I mean, so not in the order they were computed, but in some lexicographic order or whatever. And then the signer can succeed if it identifies a message signature pair with the session in which it was produced. And I'll require that for all I, the probability of success and the number of completed sessions equal to I should be roughly 1 over I times the probability of completed. Or equivalently, if you do the conditioning, you know, conditioned on I sessions completing, you want success to be roughly 1 over I. Okay? And if you don't like this, you can just collapse it all and just say something like the expectation of an indicator bit, whether you succeed or not, times the number of completed sessions should be roughly 1. But it's easier to work with the other one when you're proving things.
So can you prove that, you know, n is equivalent to 2 or something, the number of
right, so I'll tell you what I cannot do. Under the old definition, there was difficulty proving that n equals, that the 2 case implies the n case.
Yeah.
Here I didn't actually think about it yet. I think you can show that it's equivalent, which is another actually motivation for maybe why this definition is the right one.
Another very related thing, would it be more general if D outputs right away an N tuple, so you have a correlated distribution that choose N correlated messages?
Well, then you run into the same problem with the board, I think, because right then if I abort in the I session, it's not clear, right? I can't give it. So let's say that the I session in one permutation is M0 and the other one's M1. So if I give it either of the signatures, it automatically knows what happened in the which permutation was chosen. And if you don't give it those, it's not clear why you're making that restriction.
No, but then you won't compare it with 1 over I. You will compare it with some kind of...
No, you can compare it to whatever you want, but the point is it's not clear why you make this restriction on what the signer learns. That's the part that's
you have a selective decommitment problem, yeah. Otherwise...
Well, it's not exactly a selective decommitment, because the signer has to choose whether to abort before it sees anything. But I mean, it sees some protocol... it sees some protocol messages.
So
yeah,
the main point in your new definition is the independence bit.
Well, the main point is actually the D. So rather than picking, so it's actually two things. It's actually the D, rather than fixing two permutations, and it's also looking at the success minus 1 over number of completed, rather than trying to impose some weird restriction on what signatures it gets back and which ones it doesn't get back.
It's also independence.
But it seems to me the independence, in case maybe it's the same
yeah.
What you mean by D, but D is like per user.
Yeah, it's per user, right?
It's not
correlated.
Before you did impose that they're different, or what you're getting asked about the correlated.
Yeah, so in particular, they're not correlated here. And again, the argument is that this suffices for the e-voting and e-cash applications.
So is the second part significant at all, or it's mostly seeing MI?
No, the second part is significant. So actually, I can give you a nice counterexample to show why it's not trivial. So imagine taking your favorite secure two-party computation protocol and securely computing the blind signature functionality or the signature functionality. So that's actually not a secure blind signature.
Okay.
And the problem is that, for example,
lack of unique signatures.
Lack of unique signatures, but actually that's not so much of a problem. It's more that there might be two secret keys. So maybe the signer uses secret key 1 in the first session and secret key 2 in the second. And so imagine a functionality where I input a secret key, you input a message, and you get back the signature.
Yeah.
So in one instance, I can give one secret key, and another one, I can give another secret key, and they'll get two different signatures out.
So that's the unique signature.
That's the unique signature.
Oh, okay. And you can fix this, actually, but it shows why it's not trivial.
But then this interaction is concurrent, isn't it important to know the signer interact is concurrent and stuff?
So is it important? I think it... Well, look, I mean, if it's equivalent to the two-user case, then it's not going to be important. If it's not equivalent, then it may be important.
Yeah.
So it's important to figure out whether it's important. Okay, it's an open question to figure out what the open question is. So let me just go over some prior works. I mentioned already that blind signatures were introduced by Chaum. In fact, Chaum's construction, I guess he had a proof in an unpublished manuscript, maybe, but it was actually later proved secure by Ballari et al., based on, I guess, what I would call a non-standard assumption, the one more RSA assumption, and also in the random Oracle model. In terms of provably secure schemes, so there were a number of schemes proposed and analyzed in the random Oracle model, beginning with work of Poincheval and Stern, who were able to prove security unforgeability only for the case that a user requests logarithmically many signatures. And they later, Poincheval later improved this to the case of polynomially many signatures. This was improved in a bunch of subsequent work, focusing on optimizing the round complexity as well as achieving concurrent security. In terms of schemes in the standard model, there's the work of Jules Luby and Ostrowski, who use generic secure two-party computation to obtain a solution. But again, as I noted earlier, you can't just say run a functionality to compute a signature. That doesn't work. You need to do more work. And then a couple of years ago, there was work by Jan Kamenich et al. Constructing an efficient protocol based on a particular number theoretic assumption. The point here is that both of these solutions only give you sequential unforgeability and not concurrent or even parallel, as far as I know. Interestingly, Lindell showed a couple of years ago that it's in fact impossible to construct concurrently secure blind signatures without any setup assumptions. Okay, it's actually kind of interesting because he was going for a general impossibility result for concurrent secure computation, and the story he told me is that he came up with some crazy looking functionality that to prove the result, and he showed it to some people at IBM. They said, "Oh, it's a blind signature," and I guess he'd never heard of it before. So, but anyway, it's interesting that the proof he uses actually uses the blind signature functionality to derive the impossibility result. And this result, in fact, has motivated a lot of work on looking for concurrently secure blind signatures. But again, because of the Lindell impossibility result, they looked at constructing blind signatures allowing some setup, and in particular using a common reference tree model. This began with work of Okamoto last year, Kayas and Zhu also last year, Fishlin and Last Crypto. And basically, the motivation for resorting to a CRS was explicitly given as trying to avoid this impossibility result of Lindell. And the question is, well, is a CRS really necessary? Well, you know, we just said that there's this nice impossibility result that we can't do concurrently secure blind signatures without setup. But in fact, the result only rules out simulation-based definitions of security. So he was interested in simulation-based blind signature functionality. And even then, it only rules out black box proofs of security, but that's more of a less relevant to the talk here. And so the question is, well, is it possible that we could circumvent the Lindell impossibility results in a different way? So rather than resorting to a common reference string, let's instead move to game-based definitions rather than simulation-based definitions. And this is what we show. So we show the first concurrently secure scheme under standard assumptions, no bilinear maps, no trusted setup. I remark actually that as far as I can tell, I didn't check the details, but I think this is true, and Amit can tell me. I think that the work of Brock and Sahai on concurrently secure computation could actually give the same result. It requires different assumptions and also super polynomial. The main thing is that it requires super poly hardness assumptions, which is something we're explicitly going to try to avoid here in this work. Is that a fair calculation?
I guess so.
I mean, you need the signature to be secure against super poly.
Right, but it would still be weaker. Our results would be weaker because we have super quantum simulation.
No, but we're in a game-based definition. We're in a game-based definition.
In distinguishability you would get. Yeah.
Okay. Well, we can talk about it differently, so we can put the appropriate remark in the paper.
Sure.
But, okay, so let me just give a little bit of perspective that people can attack. So our work maybe can be seen in a little bit of a broader context as giving some further evidence that game-based definitions give a viable approach for concurrent security, right? There's been a lot of work on trying to obtain general results for concurrent secure computation, but staying within a simulation paradigm. And so these works have looked at relaxing things in different ways. So for example, imposing assumptions like a CRS, a PKI, or a bound on network delay, or other relaxations like bounded concurrency or super polynomial simulation. And you know, maybe one thing you can get out of this work is that for particular functionalities of interest, maybe a simulation-based definition is not the right one we should look at if it's unachievable without introducing one of these other relaxations. Maybe instead we can look for a game-based definition when it's appropriate. I mean, not to take away from generic results, which are important in their own right, but if you're interested in a particular functionality, this may be the way you'd like to go.
The impossibility definition is with simulation, but also is it relatively old standard definition of blind signatures? I mean, it seems like you're changing two things at once here.
Which is the old standard?
Well, so you have a new definition.
Oh, but it's
well
a simulation-based definition in general, so it kind of encapsulates the game-based. It kind of implies that the game-based definition
is
stronger than the game-based.
So I kind of had a question about your definition again. You said that you weaken the definition in one way where it doesn't really give privacy, but maybe that's okay for like eCash or voting or something like that.
Yeah.
I mean, is that? It seems almost it's kind of weird. It's like you're going to get some very general results, but then by eliminating the definition in this way, it's pretty kind of gets a little narrow. I mean, why not just work on eCash voting as?
So the point is the following. I mean, it's a good point, and you can't you know, now just take this and plug it into whatever you like. But when you say it's narrow, I mean, so again, I don't know of any application where it's not the case. And if you can think of one, you know, I'd be interested to hear about it, then this wouldn't apply. But I don't know of any application that's been proposed where it's important to protect against, you know, leaking information that the user might not want to leak. I mean, so like I mentioned earlier, if a user wants a bank to sign the lease on their house, the deed on their house, you know, then that might be a problem, but I don't know why we'd want to do that.
Well, there were some things like in some blank signatures where you could, part of it would be designated, part of it would be proven or something, like you could say, this is between this and this range, and then you get to input your address or, you know.
So what was the application?
Well,
we can take it offline again. So if there is an application, you have to be careful of whether this is going to suffice. But I don't know of any proposed application that for which this wouldn't suffice. In any event, so the construction we give satisfies all the definitions anyway. So it's not really, if you want more of a theoretical interest of definitions rather than an attack on a particular protocol. Yeah?
Do the possible kinds of code for a functionality which fixes its own passages?
Were you imposed? But then it's not clear what you would be. So you're restricting the inputs of the user to the functionality.
So the user doesn't pick the random message assigned.
So I think I'll say the following: if you allow a malicious user to pick their message arbitrarily,
the trusted part of the message.
Oh, you mean like an environment picks messages?
No, the functionality
picks messages. And spits out. So I think the proof in his paper does not, but I think that would give you message bit transmission, and so later results. That's not true. Okay, maybe they wouldn't. So I don't know, but then you wouldn't be secure against malicious users, right? You'd only be secure against honest users. If you have a functionality, okay. Yeah, so you'll see the construction. Okay, so maybe it's possible that's another way to bypass the results. The schemes that I know of all allow the user to kind of pick the message in the first round and then do something. So I guess you could imagine some other variant like that. Yeah?
Do you have a short answer to what does the simulation-based definition look like?
Oh, it's just simulation of the blind signature functionality, the signature functionality.
So in terms of blinders, you would not play the indistinguishability in the game, but for every transcript, there's a way to simulate.
Yeah, essentially you can simulate transcripts without knowing the actual messages, and that implies indistinguishability. So I can see I'm running only half an hour behind time. So I'll skip through a bunch of things, but I guess what I wanted to talk briefly about was to give the construction, to give some preliminaries. I wanted to mention Fishlin's approach to blind signatures. That was at Last Crypto, which is actually, in my opinion, a really nice paper, and we use as a building block in our work. I was going to talk about a partial solution using complexity leveraging. I'll probably end up skipping it in the interest of time. I hope it'll be understandable without it. And then I'll talk briefly about the concurrent zero knowledge protocol of Manoj Alon and Amit that we use inside our construction, and then give the full solution for this blind signature. So preliminaries, we're going to use ZAPs, which are these nice less than or equal to two round witness indistinguishable proofs for NP, introduced by the work in the OR. The first message is independent of the statement being proven. You can pick your favorite assumption on which you can construct these things. So there are various constructions given, most recently by Grothaskowski and Sahai last year. But you can build them out of trapdoor permutations if you like standard assumptions. We're also going to use a notion that we call ambiguous commitment, just because all the other names are already taken. So this was used in some earlier work, I mean, maybe not surprising, by Damgaard and Nielsen, maybe other variants used in other works, and maybe other works use other variants. But anyway, essentially the main point is that there are two types of keys. One type of key is going to give you perfect hiding, another type is going to give you perfect binding with extraction. And it's easy to construct these things based on standard number theoretic assumptions, in particular DDH. Okay, so Fishlin's approach was nice because it introduced a fundamentally new way of thinking about how to construct a digital signature. So previous constructions of blind signatures, and if you're familiar with Chaum's construction, all previous constructions essentially work in the same way. You would blind the message in some sense. The signer would compute some function on it and return it to the user, and then the user would unblind it and essentially recover some regular old signature on the message. So in the case of Chaum, you generate a regular RSA signature, but you do it in some funny way. And then the secure computation approach, you can do it as the same thing. You're running a secure computation protocol on some pre-existing signature scheme. And Fishland actually takes a different route to this to solving this problem. He does the following. So he has a common reference string. The common reference string will include a public key for an encryption scheme and some randomness R for an NIDK proof system. The signer will then generate a public key and secret key for a regular signature scheme. The user here is holding as input a message M. And the protocol begins by having the user commit to their message and send the commitment to the signer. This looks like the standard blinding approach, but the difference is we're not going to be doing any unblinding at the end. The signer then computes a signature on the commitment and sends that back to the user. And now the user is going to blind further the actual signature that it received. So it's going to compute a ciphertext C, which is an encryption of the commitment concatenated with the signature, and then construct an NSEK proof, essentially, that this was all done correctly. And so now you can actually verify this by checking the NSEK proof. Okay, so C and pi will be the actual signature. And then if you present MC pi, you can check that the proof that C is well formed for M. So you prove that C is an encryption of a commitment of M, and that sigma, and it's also an encryption of a sigma, where sigma is a signature on commitment.
And they're perfectly binding.
So the perfectly binding commitment scheme, yeah. So how might we think about removing the common reference string? So remember, there were two components. There was a public key encryption key that's going to be used for extraction in the proof of security. There's also the string R that's being used for the NSEK. We can remove R actually rather easily by using a zap instead of a NSEK. We now need to introduce some extra witness floating around in the system because we now have witness indistinguishability rather than zero knowledge. We can use some standard Flagge-Shamir trick to do this. Maybe a little bit more difficult, but not much more actually, is removing the public key. So remember that what we need is some kind of semantic security, but yet we want extraction. So what can we do? Well, we can just use complexity leveraging, which I guess depending on your philosophy is either a big cheat or the best thing ever. So anyway, what we'll do is we'll just use a commitment scheme that's going to be hiding for poly-time adversaries, but it's going to allow extraction in some super polynomial time. And then you just set things up so that the other components should be secure even with respect to super polynomial time adversaries, and you'll get a solution that I put on the next slide, but I'll skip. But the main point, the limitation here is that we're going to have to rely on super polynomial hardness assumptions, which again is something we explicitly want to avoid in the later protocol.
So
I'm sorry? So R was the zero knowledge, R was here and was being used to give a zero knowledge proof.
And
if you let the signer pick R in general, then it might not be zero knowledge anymore.
So we do need extraction,
So if you think about how the proof will go, if a user outputs n plus one signatures, then you're going to want to decrypt all the encryptions and pull out n plus one signatures on the underlying scheme. Okay, so to get a full solution, we have to work a bit harder. And in the full solution, what we're going to use is instead of using witness indistinguishability, which I had on the previous slide that I skipped, we're going to instead want to use zero knowledge. And because we're going to be running in a concurrent setting, we're going to need to use concurrent zero knowledge. We're going to modify the existing protocol of PRS. We're going to modify it to be a proof of knowledge. Actually, arguments will suffice. It needs only be a proof of knowledge, an argument of knowledge in the standalone sense, not in a concurrent setting. Unfortunately, we don't know how to use an arbitrary CZK argument of knowledge in a black box way. And instead, we have to use specific properties of the PRS protocol and simulation strategy in proving our result. And it doesn't mean that the only protocol we can use is PRS, but it does mean that we can't just, you can't just give us a protocol and then we plug it in and we get a construction. We're actually relying on specific properties of the CZK protocol we're using. The main things that are used in our proof is that they have essentially two phases in their simulation strategy. One of which is look-aheads, and the other one, which is straight line simulation. And we essentially, during the straight line simulation portion, messages are placed in the transcript, and you never sort of rewind once you place something in the transcript. So you never put something in the transcript and then remove it and then go back, but you're kind of building up the transcript incrementally, monotonically. The other thing that we use is that it relies on a fixed schedule, so you know in advance which messages are going to go in the straight line and which are going to go in the look ahead. So when you look worried, I get worried. We need to assume it. I don't know if we need to assume it. I mean it's you know, you can probably do a little bit of work and not assume it, but it helps the analysis if you assume it. And the main idea is that instead of using complexity leveraging, which remember allowed us to claim semantic security in one side but yet extraction on another side, we're going to instead use an ambiguous commitment scheme. So remember, the ambiguous commitment is going to have, on the one hand, in the real protocol execution, it will be perfectly hiding, but then the simulator will be able to cook things up so that it allows the extraction. And the signer is going to include the commitment key as part of his public key. If the signer could give an incorrect type of key, it could cheat. So we're going to force the signer to give a concurrent zero-knowledge proof that the key is of the correct type. Okay, so first try for the protocol would be that this is now the public key, not a common reference string, so it can be chosen in an arbitrary manner. We have a PK prime for a signature scheme, a PK star for this ambiguous commitment, and R for a zap. We begin like the Fishland protocol by having the user send the commitment to M. The signer is then going to sign it, and then just add on a concurrent zero-knowledge proof of knowledge that PK star was constructed correctly. And then we will commit using the PK star, rather than using encryption, commit to com and sigma, and then give a zap that either C is correct or that PK star is of the correct type. Okay. So the main real addition here is the CZK proof that PK star is correct and the fact that we use it to commit rather than using it to encrypt. Now the problem is, if we try to prove this secure, we run into problems. And the issue is the following. It's fairly straightforward to show that if you have a user who interacts with the honest signer and outputs n plus 1 signatures on distinct messages with non-negligible probability, you then do the standard simulation and whatever else you want to do, and you construct a forger who interacts with the signing oracle and outputs n plus 1 signatures on distinct messages with non-negligible probability. Okay, that's all standard. The problem you run into is that F might make more than n queries to its signing oracle. Right, so even if you only interacts n times with the signer, because during the simulation you're doing rewinding and whatnot, you've got to actually provide this U with more than n signatures. So you can't immediately claim that these n plus 1 signatures actually give you any forgery. So we have to fix this, and what we'll do instead is now have the signer append a random nonce to what it's signing, and the forger that we're going to construct is still going to output n plus 1 signatures, it's still going to make more than n oracle queries, but what we'd like to claim is that the signatures that are output by F are, in some particular well-defined sense, independent of any nonces that were used during rewinding, okay, and only depend on the nonces used during the straight line simulation. And so with high probability, one of the signatures output by F will in fact be a forgery, even though it made many more signing queries. So let me give the protocol and then some pictures. So the protocol will be like before. The user sends a commitment. The difference now is that the signer is choosing a nonce and signing the nonce concatenated with the commitment. Sends that back to the user, gives a CZK proof. I should mention actually this arrow is a little bit hides a lot of rounds, but anyway, it's just an arrow. And then we do it as before. So we compute now a commitment to the nonce and the commitment on sigma and give the zap like before. And the analysis is, again, we simulate the CZK, we replace PK star by a key that allows extraction. And as I said before, we reduce it to a forger who outputs n plus 1 signatures on distinct messages. It makes more than n signing queries. We have to do a little more work to argue that it's actually outputting a forgery. And if you look at the analysis here, so you can imagine we have this forger F interacting with a signing oracle. It's going to send messages consisting of a nonce concatenated with a commitment and get back a signature. And in some sense, it's interacting with two copies of the user, one of which is during the straight line portion of simulating the user's view, and another actually bigger one where it's going to be interacting with the user many more times during the look ahead portion of the simulation. And in fact, we can sort of mentally split up the signing queries into two parts, right? Those that are arising during the straight line simulation part and those arising during the look ahead portion. And the claim is that only the signature queries here are going to actually affect the final output of U, because they're the only ones that end up in the final transcript. It's not exactly true because, well, this assumes that the simulation is successful at all, And whether the simulation is successful might depend on these commitments here. So you don't actually get complete independence. You have to actually analyze it and figure out how the dependence comes in. But once you do that, the upshot is that the n plus one signatures output by you are going to include a nonce used in a look-ahead portion only with negligible probability. Because essentially it doesn't know what nonces were used in that portion. And so they're going to yield an actual forgery for F with overwhelming probability. For blindness, the key point, it's actually blindness is pretty easy to argue, but the key point is that if the assign error successfully completes any session, then in particular it gave a convincing CZK proof, and so PK star is correctly constructed, and so C is hiding. So the commitment is actually leaking no information in an information theoretic sense. I'll just mention we need perfect hiding. I mean, I don't see how to do it if you assume some semantic security. And then we can extract the witness and give a fake zap, and yada yada yada. Okay, we'll so okay, just to conclude on time. So concurrently secure blind signatures are possible without setup assumptions if we're satisfied with a game-based definition rather than a simulation-based one. And as Alon told me before the talk, why wouldn't you be satisfied? One question I think is important and interesting is whether the use of concurrent zero knowledge here is inherent. And in particular, the use of concurrent zero knowledge is going to kill you on the round complexity. And I don't see any inherent reason why that should be the case, and maybe it would be nice to get a constant round protocol, even if it's inefficient, just as a feasibility result. I'll mention that in general, outside the use of CCK or not, what one bottleneck if you're trying to construct efficient protocols is that we don't really know any signature schemes secure in the standard model. I mean, we know them, but they're not really very good. So if you're trying to get some algebraic structure, there's only a very limited class you have to know that we have available to us. Maybe resorting to bottom your maps can solve everything, so maybe you can solve this. But anyway, that's certainly one bottleneck. But I would be happy, to see a constant round solution based on general assumptions or any assumptions. And then, can we even hope for efficient protocols, even if we have some kind of high round complexity?